Good evening, and welcome to The Librarian on Authors on the Air. I am the librarian host, Tabitha Pope. This is a copyrighted and trademarked podcast owned solely by the Authors on the Air Global Radio Network, LLC, on the web at authorsontheair.com. And first up, I have author Gina L. Maxwell, who is a full-time writer, wife, and mother living in the upper Midwest, despite her scathing hatred of snow and cold weather. An avid romance reader addict, she began writing as an alternate way of enjoying the romance stories she loves to read. Her debut novel, Seducing Cinderella, hit both the USA Today and the New York Times bestseller list in less than 4 weeks, and she's been living in her newfound dream ever since. When she's not reading or writing steamy romance novels, she spends her time losing at Scrabble about every other game, and to her high school sweetheart, and doing her best to hang out with their teenagers before they fly the coop and dreaming of their move to sunny Florida once they do. You can find her online at all her online homes on GinaLMaxwell.com. And we'll talk about it later, but probably all of her
Please leave your message for
Tabitha Pope.
Hello?
Tabitha? Hello? Tabitha?
Anything. All I hear is silence.
Hello? Tabitha? Hello?
Okay, how about now?
Are you there?
Yes,
now I can hear you.
Guess what? It kicked us both off.
Oh, God. I was like, I don't know what I'm doing wrong.
I'm glad I told you. No, it kicked us both off. So I read this great bio. Did you hear the bio? It was awesome.
Yes, I did hear the bio.
So when this is over, I'm going to go back and slice this little bit out and put it all back together. But welcome to the show, Gina.
Thank you. I'm happy to be here.
Well, last week, it wouldn't even let me. I had two shows last week. So I did the first one great, and it wouldn't let me log off, and it wouldn't let me disconnect. I turned the computer off and turned it back on, and it still connected. And I was just like, oh, my God. So I couldn't do my second show. So this week, it's just kicking us off in the middle, you know, trying before we even get started. So, never know with Blog Talk.
Gotta love technology.
Okay. Yeah, not my favorite. So welcome to the show. I love the part of your bio that says you hate snow and, you know, you moved from somewhere to the horrible hell snow place and you can't wait to get to Florida because that's kind of how I feel about things. I'm not so much against snow. I just don't want to live in the kind of snow that is ridiculously, you know, stupid.
Right, yeah. It's really pretty when it first starts to fall, and then I don't want it anymore. So,
you know, I understand. Yeah, I'm kind of, my husband and I have decided that we're going to be the perfect snowbirds. We're going to get an RV, and we're going to travel all summer anywhere we want, and then we're going to go back down and live in, like, Tucson or seriously, like, Florida or somewhere all along the south for the winter and then travel again in the, because there's no way. There's just no way. Like, nobody should have to be that miserable. So I agree with you. I agree.
Yeah.
And, you know,
no, absolutely.
I'm sure the birth rates up there are really, really high because
because we have nothing better to do from October to June.
Exactly.
Yeah.
Yes. I know. That's stupid. And here we are, I'm sitting down here in Houston, and it's like 80-something, 85 today, pollen.
Oh, God,
horrible.
That would be beautiful.
We're going to have a horrible another round. This is the third round in less than a week of tornadoes and hail and whatnot, coming in 2 days.
Oh, no.
So I love it now that they can tell you, 2 days ahead of time, we're going to have hail and tornadoes. And it's like, okay, great.
Batten down the hatches.
Not that my anxiety about weather wasn't bad enough, because I've been through two hurricanes down here, but thank you.
Right.
I'm going to write a book about a woman with OCD, really bad OCD issues about weather, because that's me. So, welcome to the show. So many of my guests, other romance authors, have a similar lead-in or story about how they became a writer, because reading has so much to do with who you are as a writer.
Yeah, absolutely.
At what point in your life, though, what stage in your life did you decide that you wanted to write? And then at what point did that writing become, I want to do this for a living? You know, I want to make money at this or try to publish this.
Mine is different. A lot of writers, have always wanted to write or, started penning their first stories during, grade school or whatever.
Uh-huh.
I did as far as English classes. Our English classes, you have to write stories. Right, exactly. But, I never, ever once considered writing as a career. That just seemed like something that other people did,
Right.
It wasn't even on my radar. And I actually grew up wanting to be musical theater and dance, actress and all that stuff.
Mm-hmm.
So that's what I went to college for. But then I realized that I sucked at acting and and I had a really thin skin, so I was like, maybe this isn't the career for me. So I just became kind of like a receptionist, secretary, administrative assistant person for years and years and years, because I didn't know what I wanted to be when I grew up anymore. And in 2009, my husband was working a job where he was home only every other weekend. So it was just me and the two kids. And I had a lot of time to kill, so I was voraciously reading romance. I was at the library, a couple times a week, just getting stacks of books. And I went on a Gina Showalter kick because I was in love with paranormal romance at the time. And she is, to this day, my idol. And after one of her books, I was laying in bed, and I was just, awestruck at how affected I could be by two people who'd never existed, right?
Right.
So these characters just moved me just beyond words. And it just was one of those epiphany moments where it was just amazing to me that could happen. Mm-hmm. And so then I started thinking, if I was going to put two characters in a book, what would I do? So then I just kind of came up with these two characters. And then I started thinking, how did they meet? How do they know each other? And it really just germinated in my brain as I went about my part-time job, cleaning the house, taking care of the kids. It would just always kind of be in my head. Well, I've got what I call a goldfish memory, which is I can't remember anything for more than 3 seconds, like a goldfish. So I'm like Dory, right, from Nemo. So
That's funny.
If I don't start writing these things down, I'm going to forget them. So I literally started typing it out just for my own purposes. And I thought, if I actually write this book, I could show my friends, and my family. But mm-hmm. then the more I wrote, the more I was like, I really love this. And then I thought, what the heck, what's the worst that could happen if I try to publish this? People tell me no, then I just write it for myself anyway, and I'm no worse off. So it had only taken me a few weeks of writing it for myself just to remember it before I decided to pursue publishing. Mm-hmm. And that's when I went on Google and Googled everything I needed to know about the publishing industry, how to write fiction well.
Mm-hmm.
I got into blogging, into the writing blogger community, and it went from there.
Awesome. Once you get in, it's like a drug. Writing is just, you can't get enough of it. Yeah, and so when you started, you blogged and things like that, at what point did you decide, had you joined a group where you did critiquing or revisions or anything before you decided to submit it somewhere?
Oh, yeah, absolutely. I went through several different critique partners throughout the – it took me 3 years to sell my first book. So 3 years of I did 14 major rewrites and literally hundreds, if not thousands, of revisions, smaller scaled revisions on this book. You know, they say that your first book should never see the light of day. I was firmly in camp believing in myself. And I thought, you know, I'm going to make this book happen come hell or high water. And it is still contracted through Entangled. We've just put it on the back burner for the last 5 years. So we still have plans of releasing it. It's a paranormal romance because, like I said, that's what I was reading back then. It's my first love. So it's definitely coming down the pipeline at some point, but right now we're just, you know, I've been focusing on my contemporary career. But yeah, I went through lots of critique partners, beta readers, and that's the best way, I think, to learn. You learn so much even by critiquing other people's things. So yeah, it was a really great, very long but grueling and rewarding process.
So did you sell your first, I mean, when you're talking about your first book and you've got it on the back burner, was that the book that got you in to talk to a publisher or an agent?
Yep.
Or was it something, okay. Well, that's interesting. Yeah, I mean, they wanted to see your other work and then y'all decided, well, and paranormal kind of has its flux moments too. So,
right. Yeah.
Yeah. So it comes and goes, and there are a few authors that always seem to sell no matter what, but, man, their following is like super, super loyal, like Carolyn Sparks and like Carolyn, Sherilyn Kenyon and even Donna Grant. But yeah, but other than new, it's hard to break in when it's not the big thing of the moment.
Yeah, when it's not the upswing.
Right, yeah. But contemporary is just doing awesome. And it's so nice, I think. I talked to so many different types of romance authors that, you know, we talk about world building when they do the paranormal or the fantasy, and then we talk about what rules they have to follow, and the historical has all these rules, and they love to write contemporary. But then if you think about it, contemporary has its rules too, because you have to make sure that people identify it with it as being contemporary, you know,
right. Current
things going on. But you don't want to date it too much because you want somebody to be able to pick that book up 10 years from now and say it's still a book.
Yeah.
Yeah. So it's a lot to think about when you're writing too, which you don't really think about, do you?
No. Yeah. You try not to focus on all of the minutiae of it or you'll go crazy.
Right. Well, I mean, I think that and when you do, it kind of takes away from the creative juices to keep flowing when you stop and go, is that word
going
to be, you know, they're saying, you know, the slang word, is that going to be identifiable in 10 years? I don't know.
Right.
but, yeah, I understand. But, yeah, it's funny because I read a book recently, and they used Uber, and I thought to myself, I had to stop. And I was like, that's the first time I've ever seen anybody use Uber.
Yeah.
You know, like the character.
I've seen it a couple of times. Yep.
I've never said that before. So I had to think about it for a second, like, would I do that? Because I don't know, what if Uber's not around in, you know, 15 years?
Right.
But, you know,
yeah,
it's current. It's now. So, yeah, it made sense. So what are you a big fan of going to, writing workshop, things like that? Did you do a lot of that?
Not when I was first starting out. I didn't even really know much about them. I didn't even really know that signings existed. I mean, there was a whole, you know, reader author culture out there that I didn't even realize existed. I just thought, you know, that these are the authors that I love. I read their books. I get them at libraries or bookstores, and they are somewhere out in this vast universe, you know, that I cannot touch. And so, you know, when social media became a thing, then I was like, oh my gosh, I can actually talk to these people. And I would freak out when they talked to me, you know, like it just, that was when, you know, everything was just kind of first starting to come to a head that way socially. And, but yeah, no, I'd never been to an author signing, and I didn't do any workshops or anything like that. I didn't even know they existed. So not when I was first starting out, no.
Oh, wow. That's just, I mean, it's so different to hear these different stories because, you know, some people are totally solitary and they've just they've never had anything, you know, and it's like,
yeah,
wow, I couldn't do that without the support. I need people to, like, boost me up all the time.
Well, I say, you know, I've always said all my friends now live in my computer. You know what I mean? Like, they
yeah.
all live in my computer. And, you know, any help that I had or any workshop type things, you know, learning things that I did, it was all through online. And
yeah.
now, you know, I get to see my friends every once in a while whenever we are at signings together. But other than that, they live in my computer and it sucks.
Yeah.
But that's just how we are now, you know?
That's life, too, with kids. You don't actually get to see
right.
other people very often.
Exactly.
But,
you go to the grocery store, and it's like an outing.
Yeah, well, no, not with mine. It's like that. But
oh.
I go to the grocery store to get away from him if I can. But I
mm-hmm.
love him. But, yeah, he's pain in the ass.
Right, yeah.
Pain. It's not a good day to talk about my son. I said that before. Didn't I?
Yeah, we'll not mention that.
All right. Anyway, so you mentioned Gina Showalter and her
mm-hmm.
paranormals. What other authors were you an avid reader of that you, I don't want, not influenced you, but that you really enjoyed and kind of gave you the passion for reading and writing?
So my favorites are Cressley Cole as well, Laura Adrian, and in the contemporary area, we've got Lorelei James, Ronnie Lauren, Ruthie
Knox.
Never read
any of her.
What?
I've never read Ronnie Lauren.
Oh, Ronnie Lauren. She has amazing erotic romance, and they're
mm-hmm.
– It's she's got a great BDSM line where it's all set in Texas at what's called the Ranch, which is a BDSM ranch.
Oh.
And her writing is amazing. She's absolutely one of my go-to authors.
Put that one on my list. There you go.
Yes, please do. She's amazing.
And, see, this
and
is
she's
why
a great
I have you
person
on,
too.
To add things to my list.
Right. Yeah.
Secretly, it's just I'm building my TBR, but that's okay. sorry. What is it about contemporary that makes it fun to write and different from writing other subgenres?
That's a really good question. Contemporary is you can really go into anything that's there's so many different subgenres of contemporary, you know, you can
mm-hmm.
do any of the sports, you can do any of the, you can go into the business CEO type style. You can do, oh my God, like, you know, I'm doing fireman right now. You can, there's just so many. I've got another series that's, you know, male strippers, part-time strippers. I mean, there's just, you
awesome.
Can, you know, yeah, you can do so many different things. So whatever your fancy is right now, right? Like we all go through different tastes of things and
oh, yeah.
in every part in our life. So if you've got a fancy for, you know, MMA fighters
motorcycle.
Right now, you're really going through a phase of them, right? Motorcycle phase. Yeah. I mean, there's just, you know what I mean? So you can just pick that strain of contemporary and just run with it and then
yeah.
pick something else, you know? So it's the options are endless.
It's to me, it's like contemporary feeds everybody's weird fetishes. You know?
That's
everybody
also
there's
true.
Something for everybody, you know?
Yep, that's very true.
So, yeah, I agree. what's your fetish at the moment?
Yeah, exactly. What's you munching on now?
So what would be, as far as a type of subgenre or a subject matter, that would be an off-limits type subject for you? That you're like, no, I'd never write that.
Oh, my gosh, off-limits. I don't know that I have an off-limits.
Oh,
no, like,
okay.
Seriously, I don't. I mean, I'm just, nothing really can shock me. I go into, you know, like I run the gamut from regularly steamy until, you know, there's really nothing that you can give me that would shock me, or I'd be like, nah. I mean, you know, unless you're getting into the really bad stuff like bestiality, not going there. You know, not into Chuck Tingle stuff, but,
oh,
you know,
yeah.
Other than to laugh at it. But, you know, so, yeah, there's – I'm pretty much open for everything.
No dinosaur alien
right.
Intercourse stuff. Yeah, that stuff is weird.
My husband and I were joking about it because I was like, you've got to hear about this Chuck Tingle guy. And I was telling him about I was listing some of the titles. And I was like, this one, he's getting pegged by the coffee cup. This one is the state of California. And my husband's like,
oh, my God. Yeah, really.
Fun, but
wow.
Yeah, inanimate objects, that's where you're taking things now. Okay,
well, you know, they've run out of everything else.
Yeah, I guess they ran out of dinosaurs and aliens.
That's right. Yeah, the first time I saw the dinosaur and I was like, oh, are you I've never even in my wildest imagination could come up with something like this,
right?
What the hell? I mean, it's almost as bad as like Lewis Carroll. It's like, what the hell were you taking?
Right.
You came up with Alice in Wonderland, you know.
Yeah.
Wow. Something's wrong. So what about, you obviously, you said you, because paranormal is your first love.
Yep.
You would write paranormal and you have written paranormal. What else would you ever write, historical?
I would not, only because I wouldn't do it justice. I used to love to read it, but I don't know it well enough to do it justice. So, no, I would not write historical.
What about sci-fi fantasy?
No, again, I'm not much of a sci-fi person.
Yeah, I'm not either. I can't even read it. It's like, huh?
Yeah. Yeah, I mean, I really love paranormal and supernatural. So even going into ghosts and things like that is a little on the edge for me, but yeah, sci-fi stuff, I again wouldn't do it justice. I mean, I know you can make shit up, but
no, it's okay.
But it's just, I wouldn't, I'd be like, and then they were on like a spaceship and it was in the space, and
yeah,
you know, we've all got our strengths and weaknesses, and that just would be one of my weaknesses. So
I can't even read it. It's like that the logical part of my mind does not allow me to suspend that much reality to go there.
Yeah. Well, you know
it.
What it's hard for me with their names of things.
Yes.
Like, how many consonants can I get in this name so that the reader can never, ever pronounce it? And then I'm going to add 50 of those names. And I get so confused. I'm like, I don't know what's going on, who this person is, thing. I don't know if it's a person. So, yeah, that's hard for me.
That's how I felt with The Lord of the Rings. It's like, you've lost me. All the names of the place. Is that a name of a place or a person? I can't remember.
Or a person, right?
So,
I know.
Yeah. I don't know. Whatever, you lost me. So, yeah, it's just, but, you know, they like that freedom. They can come up with these strange names. So I think that's great. And the people who can wrap their minds around it, great. I think
absolutely.
It's fabulous.
To each their own.
It's not my, yeah.
Yep.
And we talk about this probably every show. We talk about how books are not, every book is not for every person. And,
exactly.
you're never going to be able to please everybody. Have you ever had one of those awkward moments where you're like, wow, I really thought it was better than that. I can't believe you wrote that review or just, you know.
Well, you know, there's some reviews that just crack me up. Like my daughter and I, we joke about this one that I have for Fighting for Irish. Now, if you see the cover, it is clearly a romance book. There's side boob on this cover. Okay. There's a guy and a girl embrace. There's side boob. It's just clearly a romance. And this guy bought the book and then he's like plebeian, unworthy writing, be gone. And he goes on about how it's not an Irish book. And if people want an Irish book, they should read this author. And I'm thinking, dude, did you not notice the cover? And also, if you happen to read the blurb, it says that Irish is his nickname. It's not a book about Ireland.
Gosh.
And so it's like, you know, this one-star rating, and my daughter and I just laugh about it, you know, because there's people who just, you know, and they'll write or they'll read book or, I'm sorry, they'll write reviews and they'll be like, this was super steamy romance. And it's like, so they give you one stars for that, and you're like, yep,
it's supposed to be.
So if you don't want to read that, then don't buy that, you know?
Yeah.
I mean, we try to do everything we can to warn them, and then, but yeah, it's everybody. You're always going to get those. And my publisher has always said, you know, look, the one stars and two stars, they validate the fours and fives. So
yeah,
it's not necessarily a bad thing.
That is true. What about the other end of the stick? What's like the coolest review or note from a fan or a reader?
Well, the best review I've ever gotten was from Karen McVino. She runs the Bookalicious Book Babes blog. That was for Ruthless, which is one of my stripper books. And it was so complimentary, and it's super long, that if she wasn't a reputable blogger, I would be worried that people think that I would like pay her off or something, because it was it was that crazy. And I plan on, as silly as this sounds, I plan on like printing it out and framing it somewhere, because it was like, it made me cry. It was the most beautiful thing ever. But the best things are when I get notes from readers where it's touched them on a deeper level. Like for Fighting for Irish, that book deals with, the heroine deals with sexual abuse in her past. And I don't go into it too much because I really wanted the focus of the book to be on the present and how she's overcoming it in her present life. But I've had several readers contact me who had similar problems in their past and issues. And, you know, they said that it really helped them remember that they deserve love and that they're worthy and things like that. There was one reader who read a scene in Seducing Cinderella where he's making her look at herself in the mirror and appreciate what she sees. And there was a reader who wrote to me and said that that really impacted her about her own self-worth and love. And so those are the moments that make everything worth it. It's really very, very touching.
Yeah, because writing isn't just, you sit down and you type something up. I mean, you have to pour so much of yourself, your soul into this. And I mean, these characters talk to you until you get it done. You know, it's not just, I mean, I can imagine when somebody connects on that kind of level and tells you how it helped them move past something or move through something or just identify with the character, even. That's got to be like,
it's very humbling.
Yeah,
it's very, very humbling.
Well, that's neat. So we're a little more than halfway through the show. I'm going to put the number out in case anybody wants to call in. It is 347-633-9609, and it's right here on this page if you're listening on the Block Talk Radio website. Hold on for a second. Sorry, those allergies are killing me. I'm in hell and hell down here. So, let's talk a little bit about your new series, the Boston Heat series, and the first release that just came out a couple days ago. It was on Tuesday, right?
Monday actually is when things release.
Okay. And it's Hot for the Firemen. And we were talking a little bit before the show, and firemen always have a dear place in my heart. I have very good friends that are firemen, and I actually have a friend here. He's in the Houston area. I won't name any particular areas of where he is a fireman, but he's not listening, and I doubt his wife is. But they do a calendar every year, actually, and they raise money for a children's charity in the area where he works. And the guys take it very seriously, and they work out like crazy, and they actually challenge each other to
really cool.
work out because they want to look really good for this calendar because they want to raise enough money for this charity. So I've seen some really good looking firemen in the last couple of years.
That's awesome.
And it's always, you know, the whole thing with firemen and police officers, you know, they're first responders. They've got a lot going on probably in their, they've got a normal life like we do with everything going on. And then, you know, they see a lot of stuff and they have to put their own life in danger to save people. So it kind of, it has, being a fireman is its own conflict, just on its own.
Right.
But then, okay, so your character is ex-military.
Yep.
And so he has probably, he has even more conflict. So he's bringing this baggage into this job.
Right, yeah.
So tell us
I didn't make things
about,
easy on him.
Yeah, right. Tell us a little bit about Eric Gray.
Eric was a lieutenant in as a ranger, an Army ranger, and on his last tour of duty about 7 or 8 years prior to the book, he had some bad intel from that caused something bad to happen where he lost a couple of his men, injured another one, and he's held this guilt with him this whole time, and it's but he's able to shove everything down like so many of them do, and now he as a civilian is now lieutenant of the Rescue 2 team in the Boston Fire Department, and he's actually got 4 of his other Army buddies who he had done tours with as well, who are actually on the squad with him. So they're all ex-military and they've all got their own things. But Eric, there's a power plant blast that happens before the book starts. And that's what triggers kind of everything. And it kind of makes cracks in his walls that he's built, and he starts experiencing PTSD for the first time after all these years, and it's to the point where he's now having panic attacks on calls and things. So he's put on mandated leave until he can get signed off by a therapist to say that he's fit to return to duty. So his whole world is his job, and now that he doesn't have that, he has to come to grips with, you know, actually getting himself fixed. Otherwise, he's going to lose everything that means something to him.
Mm-hmm. And so, okay, so he's got these issues, and they're telling him he has to go get some help or he can't go back to work. Okay, so in walks your heroine, who is the psychologist. Yeah, wow.
She is.
And that's a difficult relationship right there. Anyway.
Yeah. Well, the thing of it is there's nothing unethical about it. I was very, very careful. I had a psychologist consult me throughout the entire thing. And they have a one-night stand. They meet at a liquor store. So it's a complete, accidental meeting. And they end up having a one-night stand together because they're both having crappy nights. And, you know, one thing leads to another. have this amazing night together, but they've never given any names or anything like that. She wanted it completely anonymous. She's gone the next morning. Well, then he realizes that he sees her business card. I'm not going to go into it, but whatever. He finds out that she's the therapist that he's scheduled to meet with Monday morning.
Oh, my God.
He shows up Monday morning, and she's like, oh, my God, how did you find me? And he's like, yeah, I'm supposed to be here. So she immediately says, I can't see you. It's unethical. You know, we can't do that. So she pushes him on to, or, you know, rather passes him on to the owner of the practice, who happens to also be her godfather. So she never actually has him as a patient, but.
I see. That's awesome.
Yeah. But yeah, that scene where he shows up in her office on Monday morning is awesome.
Yeah,
super
so
fun.
He knows, right? He knows, but she doesn't know.
He knows
so
walking
he, okay.
in, right.
Okay. Oh, yeah, that's got to be a good scene. That's good.
Yeah, it's fun. It's super fun. He ropes her into, like, he gets her into agreeing to a bet. He's like, okay, if your boss agrees that you should go on 3 dates with me, then you have to go on those dates. And she's like, whatever, because he's not going to agree to that. Little
right.
does she know that he already knows him. And so he manipulates the situation for sure. And she's like, what? So it's really, it's a funny, funny scene. And yeah, I mean, she could, if, you know, ultimately tell him to go blow some steam, but you know,
right.
she secretly wants to go on the dates too. So, and they have this big fun time where he has to pursue her because she's blowing him off and
yeah,
you know, she's ignoring his calls and stuff, and he's leaving all these funny messages and stuff. It's cute.
Lots of banter, I can imagine, in this one.
Yes, lots of banter.
How important do you think that it is in romances? I think in romances, probably more than any, that especially when you're adding humor to it, you know, supply humor into it, that dialogue is like super important to the story.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, dialogue for me, if I could write an entire book of dialogue, I would. Yeah, that's definitely one of my strengths. And you know, you get so much across in not only the outward dialogue, but the internal monologue that they're having at the same time. So,
mm-hmm.
you know, depending on whose point of view you're in, which is
right.
also why I really enjoy writing both dual points of view, because I want to
mm-hmm.
be in both of their heads. So, yeah, I mean, you know, there's a lot of light moments and funny moments in this book, but there's also a lot of very seriousness stuff. I took it very seriously to accurately portray, you know, some of the PTSD, some of the things and symptoms that our soldiers and military personnel come home with. And
mm-hmm.
so there's a flashback scene, you know, so there's, and then the scene after that where he's dealing with it, he's saying one thing to her, but he's thinking another, you know what I mean? So there's a lot
right.
of, there's a lot of, it depends on, and then their body actions, like their physical, like what are they portraying with their body as opposed to
yeah.
what are they actually saying. So yeah, there, it's very important.
When you were studying about the PTSD, did you talk to or do interviews with any ex-military
yeah.
or people? Yeah.
Yep. I have, well, one of my best friends, Rebecca Yaros, is also an author, and
mm-hmm.
her husband is Army. And he's done, I think, 4 or 5 tours. So he, I've learned things through her. But I also have a sergeant. He was a sergeant in the Army. And I connected with him over Twitter, funny enough. And he is my, like, permanent military consultant. Like, anything
yeah.
military, I go to him. I will send him emails, texts, pictures. We talk on the phone. When I write a scene, I send it to him to make sure that everything's right. He'll give me tips, tell me, no, they would never say this, you know, or they would, these are the terms.
That's
yeah,
awesome.
I actually gave him a little bit of a role, a little bit of a cameo. I named one of the characters, the secondary minor characters, after him in the book. And so, yeah, I took a lot of experiences because he's had it. And dealt with it. He's had flashbacks. So I was very, I took a lot of care with the research for that because, again, you know, there's going to be people who read this
mm-hmm.
who experience PTSD, whether it's from military or not, you know. It,
mm-hmm.
And so I wanted to make sure
I
got it right. So I also spoke with a psychologist.
That's and that's good because it comes from a place of authenticity when you've done that kind of research, you know. And
right, yeah.
That's not something that I think anybody really wants to treat lightly in any story.
Right.
You know, whether you're a big supporter or not, that's just PTSD in any form from any reason is just a really difficult
mm-hmm.
thing to explain to people who don't have it.
Right.
Just like depression and things like that are difficult to explain as well. But
exactly.
Yeah, no, that, I understand. And that's really cool that you've got a kind of permanent contact.
Yeah, I also have a permanent Boston contact
uh-huh.
because I've never been to Boston. And so this is set
uh-huh.
in Boston. And
and
I've got someone out there who helps me with all that. Yep, exactly. Yep. And then I've
got a firefighter
person. So I, you know, I don't know anything about anything with this series. So I have to skip. I'm like, look, I know what I want the book to be about, but I don't know anything about all these other things. You have to help me. Mm-hmm. So
yeah, that's good. Well, and you know, a lot of people think that contemporary romance authors don't have to do so much research, but I think, yeah, I think you do.
I think
in order to be authentic, you have to do the research and make it, you know, as real as it can be for somebody. There's so many different readers are just like authors. You know, your reading journey, your writing journey has been different than others, and readers are experiencing so many different things. So
right.
I think that's great.
we get called out on it. You know what I mean? We always get called out on it if we're wrong.
Yeah.
So it's, you know, it's important that we do as best we can to get whatever it is that we're talking about correct.
Yeah. I'm less likely, I think, to call out contemporary, but I'm a big historical reader. So when I read historicals and something is glaring at me, like, I don't think that was around during that time, you know?
Right.
And the librarian in me goes, Google that shit, you know, so here I am
right.
Googling it. I'm like, damn it, I didn't want to do that. But, yeah, it happens. Yeah, readers are like that. I'll admit to it.
I am, too. I'm the same way.
So is this a beginning of is this going to be like a trilogy, four-part? Do you know where this is going to go, this series?
There's five guys on the Rescue 2 squad, so I plan for five books. Yep.
Awesome.
They each get their happy ending. Yeah.
More yummy, the better.
Yeah. Yeah, I'm excited about them. I really love these characters.
So do you have any kind of time frame over, or is this going to be like over the next 2 years, or how do you plan?
Yep, it'll be, I think, the series will probably end next year. So I know that the second book will be out this year for sure, probably in the next few months. And then I'm not sure. I'm thinking maybe the last three will be all next year, but I'm not totally sure. That depends a lot on my publisher as well. So
do you have other plans on your calendar for the next year and a half?
Yep. Yeah, I've got two more books in the Chicago Stripper series to do. So book three will be out this year as well, probably late summer. And then I'm guessing the fourth and final book for that one will be next year, early next year maybe. So, yep, those are the two series that I'm working on at the moment. And who knows what else, but
yeah,
those for sure.
Does your publisher come to you often or ever and say, I know you're working on this and this, but there's something I want you to do. And then you kind of have to go with it.
It has happened. Yeah. No, it has happened before. Absolutely. Yeah. And so things get shifted around. Yeah, absolutely. I was never planning on writing the erotica, the stripper series, but so I was working on just the firefighter series at the moment. And also the fourth book, the fourth and last book in my MMA fighter series, and Entangled Open was getting ready to launch their Scorched line, which is their erotica line. And Liz came to me and she's like, look, we're opening up this line. I would love for you to write for this, you know, this line and be one of the first books on it. Can you write me this book, you know, a book for it? And I was like, you mean you're not going to hold me back on any of the sex? Yes, I will write for this. I can do whatever I want. Yes. So I stopped what I was doing and wrote Shameless in like, I think 3 weeks, which was crazy insane. and then like had 2 weeks to edit it, I think. And then we launched it, but yeah, so that started that whole series. So that wasn't even a glimmer in my eye until the last possible moment. So we kind of switched my schedule around for it. So yeah, it happens for sure.
Yeah. So well, that's neat, and that they, you know, that your editors know enough about you and your writing that they think that you could write this, and here, do this. What else do they do? Do they come to you and say, like, you know, this is really hot right now. You think you could come up with something for this? Or do you just do your thing and bring it to them?
Yeah, for the most part, I've done my thing and brought it to them.
Okay.
I've never been asked to write to the trends. I don't know if they've done that with other people. They very may well have. I don't know, but
yeah.
I've always had projects going. So yeah. They've,
understand that.
I've still got 1, 2, 3, 4, 5. I still have like 8 contracts with them, 9, 10, something like that. So I've got, I've got projects galore. So they're not about to be like, so how about you want to, I mean, they have. They've been like, so do you want to write another Brazen? I'm like, no. Can I please just get through these first?
Right.
One thing at a time, please.
I understand.
Yeah.
So when you decided to go on and do, and write the Brazen line, did that open up a fan base that you didn't have before, or were your readers loyal switching over and back?
Well, the Brazen line was my very first book.
Remember
when I told you I had my very first contract ever was with Entangled, and it was for my paranormal trilogy.
Okay.
But then what happened was I was going to be – we had just moved to Texas. And I was going to be, my unemployment was going to run out. And I told my editor, who is Liz, who happens to be the owner of Entangled as well. I said, look, I'm going to have to get a full-time job in a couple of months when my unemployment runs out, just so you know. And she's like, no, you can't get a job. I need you to be a full-time writer. And I said, yeah, I can't afford that. So she's like, okay, well, in the meantime, because it was going to take like a year to get the paranormal out and stuff.
Right.
Which then, for those who don't know, your royalties don't come for like 3 to 6 months after that, right?
Yes.
So she's like, well, let's just write a category really quick. We'll get it out digitally. It'll give you some money in the meantime to get you through, you know, bring in some income for you. I said, perfect. Mm-hmm. What's a category romance? I had no idea. I was like a paranormal single title reader, right?
Yeah.
She's like, well, you know, the ones with all the tropes. I said, ah, that's awesome. What's a trope?
What's a trope?
I had no idea. She's like, oh, little girl. So she gave me a bunch of books to read, and she told me all about tropes and things like that. And she's like, okay, so write one of those. And we'll put it out. So I wrote Seducing Cinderella in 2 months, and we put it out in July, and that's the one that hit. It went all the way to number 9 on the New York Times list.
Awesome.
So it was kind of just like this whirlwind that I wasn't expecting. I'm like, oh, I'm just going to put out this little book, and it's going to bring in some money so that I can write finish the paranormal stuff.
Mm-hmm.
And because it hit, and neither Liz nor I expected it, we were kind of like, oh, crap, now what do? We have to write the next book. So that is how I started built my readership was with the Brazen line. And it just went from there.
Well, I think it's much easier to take people from the steamy erotic romance over to regular contemporary than the other way. Sometimes.
Yeah.
Sometimes. Well, like me, I don't care careless. I'll read anything. I'm the book whore. Good care.
Yeah.
But,
well, we're hoping that my contemporary people will follow me into the paranormal when I get there.
Oh, yeah. Heck yeah. I've followed authors back and forth across. And, you know, you can tell where their strengths are, but you still like the others. So it's okay.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. It's all good. Well, I have just really enjoyed having you on the show.
Me too. Thank you.
Can you tell us where the best place to find you, connect with you online? Do you have a newsletter on your website?
Yep, I do. If you go to my website, you can get a newsletter. You can also sign up for my super infrequent blog posts. My newsletter is also super infrequent because I suck at both of those things. But, you know, like it'll at least come out when I have a new release, so you know when that's happening, which is fine because a lot of times we get too much in our inboxes anyway, right?
Yeah.
So, yeah, absolutely. And then the best place to hang out with me, it's the place where I say my readers become my friends, is the Maxwell Mob on Facebook. So that you can also find that via my website.
Okay. Well, awesome. That's great. And your books are in all the major retailers online and the, what do they call it, brick and mortar. Brick and mortar. Yeah, I can never remember that. I'm always saying box and crate. I don't. That doesn't make sense.
Crate and barrel.
Crate and barrel. Yeah. Gosh. Brick and mortar. Yeah. So and they also can get them the links on your website for those as well.
Yes, absolutely.
So, well, I'm super looking forward to the rest of the Boston Boys and Firemen, of course. And thanks so much for being on the show. I appreciate it.
Thanks for having me, Tabitha. I really enjoyed it.
I wish you much success with this series.
Thank you so much.
You have a great evening.
You too. Bye-bye.
All right. And thanks, everybody else, for listening in this evening. You can find me on Facebook at The Librarian on Authors on the Air, and I'm on Twitter as HOT_librarian_. Yeah, that's Hot Librarian. That was a joke, but it just ended up being that. And this broadcast has been recorded and will be available as a podcast from the Authors on the Air website, SoundCloud, and iTunes. Authors on the Air Global Radio Network can be found online at www.authorsontheair.com. And Facebook, Twitter, Pinterest, anywhere else you can think of in the social media world. Thanks so much for listening in. And I will see you again next Thursday at 9 p.m. Eastern on The Librarian. Sweet dreams.